Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is news editor for Apple World Today, Dennis Sellers. Dennis, welcome.
Thank you. Hello. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
Say, you are in Nashville?
Yes, Nashville, Tennessee.
You must know Josh Centers because he was on the show last week.
I have talked to him. I don't know him. We've never been together personally, but I have talked to him on the phone and by email and everything. But we've never actually got together in person.
Oh, you should meet him. He's an awesome fellow. I've had him on the show a couple times, and he's great. But back to you. You, Dennis Sellers, are a contributing editor for Apple World Today, news editor. You've worked in the newspaper business for over 20 years, and you've taught freelance writing. And after writing for Mac Central, you launched several Apple publications and remain one of the best-known Apple voices. I've been reading you for years, ever since Maximum News, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, I've been doing this for a long time and enjoy what I do. So I'm hoping I've got many more years left of Apple coverage.
Yeah, it's fun. There's always something going on. It's like politics. There's something new and exciting happening every day. You never run out of material.
That's true.
So tell me, did you start your career wanting to be a journalist?
Yes. Ever since I was young, I've enjoyed writing. And I guess even by the time I was in the seventh grade, I knew I wanted to be a writer for a living. And
seventh grade. Was there some event or some person who inspired you? How did that happen?
Well, I don't know. I grew up, I was an avid reader from the time I was young, read books and comic books and enjoyed making up stories and talking to people. So I don't know. Journalism just seemed like the natural course. It wasn't from any kind of experience from my parents. My dad ran a sawmill and was a logger. So I grew up working in the heat of the Tennessee summers at a sawmill, getting out hot and sweaty. And I tell people I learned two things from that. I learned to work hard, and I learned that I didn't want to do that.
That'll do it. That'll do it. Did you study for journalism in college?
Yes, I have a major in journalism, a bachelor's degree in journalism, and then I also have a master's degree in special education.
From where?
My bachelor's degree is from the University of Tennessee at Martin, and my master's degree in special education is from Tennessee State University here in Nashville.
Tennessee State. You know, I lived in Knoxville for a few years, was very familiar with UT and the football program there when I was working in Oak Ridge, but I'd never heard of Tennessee State. I was there for many years. Interesting.
Well, of course, the UT I went to was the smaller campus in a small town in West Tennessee, Martin, Tennessee. It's not the big one that everybody knows for the Vols, the big campus in Knoxville.
That was a real cultural experience for me, having come from Colorado. Yeah. So what got you into special education? That's an interesting twist. I haven't seen that before with any of my guests.
Well, I got a minor in education when I was at UT Martin. I guess just sort of an insurance policy in case the journalism thing didn't work out. After my son was born, I was putting in extremely long hours working for a weekly newspaper here in Middle Tennessee, not making a whole lot of money. So I started work. I became a teacher at Cheatham County High School in Ashland City, Tennessee. To make a long story short, at one point in time, they phased out the department that I was working in, teaching English to vocational students, and they moved me over to the special ed department, teaching English and math to special ed students. The turnover is quite high in that department, so I ended up somehow in charge of the special ed department. And they said, you're going to have to be taking some more courses in it. So I ended up taking courses, and even though I didn't really intend to, I ended up getting a master's degree in special education. And then in the evenings and in the summers, I did some freelance writing. And so that's the circuitous route I took to becoming an Apple journalist.
Did you enjoy the special education, or was it frustrating?
I enjoyed working with the students. As with most things in education these days, the paperwork was a nightmare. So I enjoyed working with the kids, but I did not enjoy doing all the paperwork that entailed.
The paperwork for teaching the classes itself, or the paperwork on the administrative side?
The administrative side, you had to keep these extensive individual education profiles for all your students, and you had to meet with parents and everything, which is probably a good thing. But I always felt like that some of the things that, at least here in Tennessee, that the state wanted to impose was some of their standards and requirements were come up with, developed by people that had never been in a classroom before. So it was a little bit frustrating trying to meet the state guidelines and everything when I felt like I could be doing more productive things with regard to my students and my teaching.
Okay. Sort of like progress reports, because the kids needed special help, and so had to pay closer attention to their progress. Is that right?
Yes.
Interesting. Had you fallen into the Mac sphere by this point, or was that later?
Well, while I was teaching, at one point I did get out of special ed, and I was teaching at a private school just to try something different, still doing the freelancing on the side, and I ended up in charge of the middle school yearbook, so I started working. That was Mac hardware and software, so I started using that, and that's when I really became a Mac fan. I'd used a Mac before, but that was where I started using it on a very regular basis, and begin using that as my personal computing platform as well.
You know, I would say perhaps 10% of my guests tell me the story that they got involved in publishing. They were doing something at the college or university involving a yearbook or some sort of newspaper or publication. And of course, that was their first encounter with Macs. And they just kind of fell in love with the Macs as a publication tool, and they never left the fold. That's an amazing experience.
Well, like I say, once I started using a Mac, then I've been a fan ever since. So it seemed like a natural course with my background in journalism and teaching then to start writing about Apple and its different products.
You know, I've been writing about education from time to time, and it seems like Apple is suffering a little bit, not able to deliver the low-cost equipment that the schools are demanding these days because of their press for funds. And I wonder if Apple can ever repeat or recover that ability to inspire students in the classroom to the point where, you know, they spend a lifetime involved in Macintoshes. It could be that the iPhone is the new halo device, and the students have their phones, and that's what ropes them into the Apple fold and Apple Music, as opposed to the Mac. So the sands may have shifted. What do you think?
I think you're probably right about that. I know it's a catch-22 situation. I mean, as an educator and somebody who raised two kids and have a granddaughter, I mean, I think the Macs and iPads are great learning tools, things to learn with and be creative with and everything. But being a former teacher, I realize that school budgets are always tight, and sometimes it's at least from an administrator standpoint, it seems easier to go with a lower cost platform.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Whenever I get an educator on the show, I'm suddenly very curious about the kinds of tools that you guys used. When you were teaching in special ed, were you using computers or tablets in the classroom? Or was that?
Now, this was several years ago at this point in time. We were using, we didn't really have computers in the classroom. We had a computer lab, and the students would go there on a regular basis, and they did have a Macs and PCs in the lab, but it wasn't like, certainly no everybody didn't have their own computer. They didn't have a tablet or a laptop or even a lot of smartphones back then, which probably shows you how long ago I was. It's been since I was in the classroom full time.
So I guess the notion at that time was the computer was a device to learn about in a lab, but wasn't integrated into your daily educational experience like today when students walk around with tablets and phones.
Oh, no. I mean, people, like I say, nobody had their wearable device or their mobile phone with them at one time. Of course, like I say, that was several years ago. But back then, we were still using old-fashioned things like textbooks.
Still today.
True.
So how did Mac Central come about?
Well, while I was freelance writing, and I did some writing for some local magazines here in Middle Tennessee and some national magazines, some health and fitness thing, because I've always been an avid runner and love to play ball and everything. But since I was interested in the Mac, and once I started getting on the internet, and I ran across the site Mac Central, which Stan Flack had launched, and found it really intriguing. So at one point, I just asked him, I think this was in 1996, I just sent an email to Stan asking if he needed anyone to do some writing for him. And he said he did, just an occasional article now and then, because the site was growing. And so what started out as a couple articles a week turned into more articles, and eventually then he offered me a full-time job. So I left the education field and was working at home, writing news and reviews and pretty much doing what I'm doing now, except for Mac Central. Did that for about 4 years until Mac Central, which if I believe I'm correct in saying that it had grown to be the largest Apple News site in the world at that point in time. It was bought by ID Publications, the company that published Macworld and some other magazines.
Did the essence of Mac Central survive, or did it just get morphologically absorbed in the editor's scatter?
It was the latter. It started out, it pretty much remained as it was, but slowly it was assimilated into Macworld itself, and the Mac Central name disappeared, and the editors, for various reasons, just sort of scattered and went their own way.
I kind of wonder about that. You know, you wonder why a big organization buys a smaller publication like that when, in fact, the identity of the publication is lost. The identity and the notoriety of the editors is lost. I don't know what they're thinking when they absorb a publication like that. Maybe they're just trying to eliminate competition.
Well, that may be. And like I say, for a while it went smoothly, but then I won't get into all the specifics, but then it just didn't go in the direction I had hoped it would. So like a lot of the other editors, I just branched out on my own for better or for worse.
Who were some of the editors? I'm trying to remember who some of the notable writers were for Stan Flack at Mac Central. You and do you remember anybody else?
Oh, yes. Jim Dalrymple, who I think was one of the co-founders, and he has The Loop now. Yeah. Peter Cohen, who was our gaming editor.
Peter.
And so he's still writing, and I'm not sure what all Peter's doing now, but Peter was there. Let's see. They're the main. There's others that came and went, but those were the main ones I hung out with and went to trade shows with and that sort of thing. Peter and Jim.
You know, it's amazing. I've talked to other guests who've done exactly what you did. They had some writing experience. They worked in publication. They were familiar with the Mac, and they started writing to an editor and maybe contributing in some way with comments or making their skills known and sort of just kind of pushing and then getting a writing job. And then that it just flourishes and becomes the beginning of their writing career. It's amazing how that's happened to so many of my guests. I don't know if there's a lesson there for the listeners about how to, you know, get in on the ground floor of a certain field, but I guess it's connections and skills and being in the right place at the right time. And And just being persistent.
Yes, and obviously, you know, of course, obviously write about something that you're passionate about and you're interested in, because I think that will show in your work. And, I mean, we had a great time at Mac Central. Stan and Peter and Jim and the other folks involved, we had it was a lot of fun. It was a really fun 4 years.
Yeah, I think I remember running across your name at that point and learning who you were following Mac Central. That was a lot of fun. Well, I want to continue with this discussion. This is fun. I want to talk to you a little bit more about your career and Apple World today and some other stuff. But first, we have to take a break. Folks, we'll be right back after this commercial segment. Stay with us. Hi, this is John Marcellaro with the Mac Observer. This episode is brought to you by Jamf Now. Jamf Now helps you set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices on demand. We all know it's pretty easy to keep track of your own Mac, iPad, or iPhone, but what about the other Apple devices in your organization? As a business grows, so does its collection of devices, making it increasingly harder to manage everyone's iPad, iPhone, and Mac. This is especially true if employees are in different locations. So with Jamf Now, you can check real-time inventory, configure Wi-Fi and email settings, deploy applications, protect sensitive company data, and even lock or wipe your devices from anywhere. Jamf Now manages and protects your devices so you can focus on your business instead, and no IT experience needed. All you background mode listeners can start securing your business today, setting up the first 3 devices for free forever. You can add more devices for just $2 a month per device. So create your own free account today at jamf.com/BGM. That's jamf.com/BGM. And now back to the show. We're back. Thank you, Jamf, for being a sponsor of Background Mode. We really appreciate it. I'm chatting with the news editor for Apple World Today, Dennis Sellers. So we were chatting about the evolution of Macworld and what happened there, and I'm sorry, Mac Central. Did you not start then your own site, Maximum News?
Yes, I did. I've actually had 2 different sites since then. One was Maximum News, which was basically the best I could come to recreating Mac Central on my own without a Stan around and my partners and the gang from Mac Central. And that went pretty well. But what I had found out that I was good at was writing and editing and that sort of thing. Not so good at selling ads. So that was around that site for, several years. And then Neil Tickton over at Explain Corporation, the folks behind Mac Tech, the magazine, mm-hmm. and conferences, acquired that site, and I became news editor for him, where I worked, and I still freelance for Mac Tech. But at one point in time, I had some folks that owned Apple retail stores came up with an idea that said, we've got a great idea for a news site that would have news and everything, but would have geographically targeted ads. And the idea was that I would produce content as I always had, and Apple retailers had owned the individual stores, since they were obviously facing more competition from Apple's own retail stores, would buy banner ads, and we had a system set up that based on whatever zip code the store was in, if you were in that zip code, that was the ad that you would see when you came to the site. Well, so I spent the time and the effort to make that happen, only to find out that despite what several of them had said, a lot of the retailers decided they didn't want to spend the monthly money on it. So I worked at that for a while, but it never really gained the traction, financial traction that I hoped it would. Then in 2015, Chuck Joyner, whom several of you may know from his podcast and everything.
I've been on his and he's been on mine.
Good guy. I've known Chuck for years. He introduced me to Steve Sandy, one of the folks behind Tua, the unofficial Apple website that was around for several years. And it was bought by it was bought by somebody, and sort of like with Mac Central, then it just sort of got assimilated and disappeared. But he and a friend of his had launched a site called Apple World Today. And Chuck thought that Steve and I would get along just fine. So I contacted Steve about writing, and we teamed up and have been together at Apple World Today for about 3 years now, where I'm happy to say I'm having the most fun since my Mac Central days.
Yeah, it's a nice publication. I recommend it. It's appleworld.today.
Yes.
That kind of struck me funny. I hadn't heard of that domain name before. That's kind of interesting.
Well, it struck me as funny, too. And Steve would be the person, I guess, to ask about how that came about. It's both, I guess, good and bad. It's good in that it certainly sets us apart. It's also a little confusing because a lot of people, if they want to try to get in touch with us or whatever, they'll try to type in appleworldtoday.com, and it's appleworld.today. There is no .com.
All right. Right. I know, Steve. He's been on the show, and he's a good friend. We've been out to dinner and spent some time together. Steve's a great guy, and I'm sure you're having fun working for him.
Oh, yeah. We get along great. And, you know, if somebody needs some time off, the other person covers for them. I know he's been on a road trip here recently, so I've been doing the bulk of the news, but he's back now. So if I need a day off, I'll take a day off. And it's just no we just have a lot of the same interest and sort of the same age and everything. So we really work together well, and I'm having a lot of fun doing this.
Well, thanks for sharing me the career arc that you've had. That's an interesting story. And listeners, there's a lot of good lessons there about how to stick with it and develop specialties and to know your skills and have a passion and then weasel your way in with a network. And it usually works. Every guest I've talked to, it's worked for them. So hang in there, listeners, and follow these guests. They're fun to listen to and hear their stories about how they succeeded. So in this second segment of the show, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts, because you have such a long experience with Apple. And you're one of the great Apple voices in the community. How are you feeling about the state of Apple these days?
Pretty good overall. I mean, there's some things that could be improved. Obviously, as anybody who follows the Apple industry knows, there's been more than their share of security issues and everything with their operating systems. And supposedly at June's Worldwide Developer Conference, the next versions of iOS and macOS will concentrate more on bug fixes and security and stability rather than whiz-bang new features. Whether that's true or not, we'll see. But I think that's probably the case. But, I mean, my main work machine is a 27-inch iMac. Since I do work out of my home office, I love it. When I do travel, which is not a whole lot anymore, I have a 13-inch, 12.9-inch iPad Pros. And unlike some people, that couldn't be my main computer. I just find working with macOS much easier for doing my daily productivity work. But it's a fine traveling companion, and I can keep my blogging up if I'm taking a short trip or visiting my siblings in West Tennessee over the weekend or whatever. I can still check my email and post stories. So I'm still very excited about the Apple ecosystem. I have an Apple Watch, since I run. I use it to time my workouts and keep track of my workouts.
Yeah, me too. That's great.
So overall, I'm still optimistic. I just hope that Apple, proceeds slowly and doesn't overextend itself into too many categories.
What do you think remains to be done in macOS? What would you like to see at WWDC?
Well, one thing I've long wished for, and one of my favorite Mac apps is from St. Clair Software called default folder, which I find just an indispensable thing. It really expands the open save dialog capabilities of Mac OS. I've told John over at St. Clair Software that Apple should buy them and incorporate that functionality into Mac OS itself. So that's one minor thing I'd like to see. I guess I would like to see more, Apple concentrate on the security and stability features, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any really just flashy new features. I'd love to see the news app come to my Mac itself, so I could check the news headlines on it on my Mac as well as my iPad. But off the top of my head, I can't think of any just really, really big features that I'm just dying to see in the Mac.
I'll tell you one I'd like to see. I'd like to see a full rewrite of Time Machine 2.0 APFS based hard links converted to snapshots. And a really robust and modern backup system, Time Machine redone.
Now, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that, but that is a good idea.
I like that. Have you heard the rumors about Apple jiggering Xcode so that you can write one app and target it for Mac OS or iOS?
Oh yes, we covered those rumors, and I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that. That's an interesting idea. I guess it would, I don't know, I guess it would help the Mac a little bit. I hear a lot of people complaining about that there's, the Mac App Store doesn't have nearly as many apps as the Apple App Store for iOS, and that's certainly true. But on the other hand, there's a lot of apps on the Apple App Store that are all extremely similar, it seems to me. So I don't know. I think that's a possibility, but I'm also a little bit dubious that will happen. But I guess we'll find out here in just a few more months.
Yeah, it won't be very long. March is going to be over soon. Yeah. You told me earlier that you have a HomePod. I wanted to ask you your thoughts on that. I do not have one yet. I'm pondering it still, kind of, standing on the sidelines, watching and seeing whether I really think I need one. What do you think of yours?
Well, the main thing I use it for is as a wireless speaker. I love it for that. The sound quality is really, really good. It's one of the best, probably the best speaker I've ever had in my office and my home office here. And with what I do, I get to test out a lot of speakers, but the sound quality for music is incredible. And since I do work at home, I listen to music quite frequently during the day. So it's been an excellent investment for me. I use it less for, to control smart apps from the home app on it, but as a wireless speaker to listen to music, if you do it a lot, I think it's a great product. If it's just, if you just listen to music occasionally from your Mac, you could, I would say probably, you can find a less expensive alternative. But if you're playing music all day long, it's truly a great speaker.
Do you use it with Apple Music and then talk to Siri, or are you streaming from another device over Wi-Fi?
Sort of a combination of all. I do have an Apple Music subscription, so I will, if there's like a new album I want to check out, I will go to Apple Music and do that. And I also have a product from Rogue Amoeba's Airfoil for Mac, which lets you stream some things to your HomePod that there's a few things that AirPlay won't let you stream directly that I've had trouble with, but Airfoil from Rogue Amoeba sort of overcomes that thing. So pretty much any audio that I'm doing for enjoyment while I'm working on my Mac, I just stream it over to the HomePod and enjoy.
Cool. I've got one more question. We're starting to run out of time, but I think we have enough time to explore one more topic. Do you think we'll see the glorious Mac Pro, the much discussed, rumored 2018 Mac Pro announced, at least at WWDC?
Okay, I'm just going to since I make predictions all the time, I'm going to say.
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yes, I'm going to say yes. It'll be introduced at Worldwide Developer Conference, but it won't be available for several months thereafter. Sort of like they did with the iMac Pro. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes. We'll get a tease of it and a standalone display in June, but it may not be available for till the fall.
Do you think it's going to be really, really expensive? Like, you know, $79.99 for starters?
Or... Oh, I'm afraid to predict that, but I'd say it won't start any cheaper than the iPad Pro. So that probably means, yes, more than $5,000 easily. So.
Yeah, because it's the top of the line machine. It cannot cost less than an iMac Pro.
No. And of course, you know, it will be certainly be targeted for just a select audience, not for, I mean, even I would love to have an iMac Pro, but there's no way Dennis can afford an iMac Pro. And quite honestly, I don't really need an iMac Pro, but like all Apple fans, if I had $5,000 just sitting around with nothing else to do, I'd probably buy one.
Yeah, that's a pretty nice computer. I've heard very good things about that. Several of my guests have one. Let's see, I think it was Joe Kissel who said he and his wife went together in their business running Take Control Books. Of course, if you're a publisher, you know, and you're work intensive and you're publishing, you have to have a fast machine. So, yeah, cool. Well, we're about out of time. This went fast. I can't believe it.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. So thanks for coming on the show and telling me your story. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it anytime.
Hey, tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
Okay, well, go to www.appleworld.today. Remember, no COM, just appleworld.today. And then you can, under the About tab, you can find our contact information, or you can just email me directly at dennis.sellers, no caps, at appleworld.today.
All right. What about Twitter?
Now, I just could go ahead with the email. I play around with Twitter, but I don't do a whole lot of Twitter work, so maybe that makes me a dinosaur.
All right, cool. Well, thanks again. It was nice getting to know you better, and thanks for telling us your story, and good luck at Apple World today. And folks, go see appleworldtoday.today for the latest news, and you'll find Dennis Sellers writing there. So that about wraps up the show. Folks, thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you again next week.